You're listening to Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby on Joe, together with Guinness.
Right, Jack, great to have you in here in the middle of a hectic few months for yourselves, and everything's kind of ramping up ahead of the World Cup. But you had a down day and a chance to kind of go off and kind of press some flesh and kind of promote some stuff as well today.
Yeah, absolutely. You know, firstly, it's nice to get out and about at the camp for a bit. And yeah, things are kind of coming to a crescendo at this stage, and it's come down to business time. But now it's nice to take a moment off, morning off, and talk about sports fest that's coming up. You know, obviously, a big sports fan and love, you know, so many different types of sports and been playing them since I was a kid. Like, so to get involved with this, which is great, you know, something that really brings the community together and so many different people. All walks of life.
And yeah, I saw you, so you were like Gerrards in secondary school, weren't you, as well? And did you have, like, as you said, into Matt, loads of sports when you were growing up? Did you play other sports as well?
Yeah, would have played, so Gaelic would have been my first love, played Gaelic for years. You know, I'd see myself when I hang up the boots, I'd probably go back and play out in Kilmack. You know, my older brother would have been captain there for years for the men's senior team. And, you know, I played there since I was about, probably started off when I was 6 or 7, and then played all the way up till I was about 17, until rugby kind of started being a bit more dominant and probably a bit more important. But you know, through Kilmack Primary School, then went on, played football for Glencormick United out there as well. So it was a very small knit community. And a lot of the lads who would play Gaelic would also play in the football team as well. So you know, that, and with obviously, like, in the summer, I played tennis and swam and whatever else. So it was, my poor old mother was busy enough ferrying people around different parts of Wicklow and on a Thursday evening to play games and whatever else. So yeah, that was definitely my first love. And then it wasn't until Gerrards that I picked up a rugby ball, and didn't come around to rugby as quick as I did football. Like, so it took me a few years, but I think I got there in the end.
And did you have the memories? Because I remember when I played football when I was younger, you'd basically the lads who, the dads who gave everyone a lift in the car would be the guys that would get their game as well.
Like, yeah.
But was it a thing where often to be 8 or 9 of us in a car? It surely wasn't legal. Were you in those kind of days?
Yeah, there were definitely different times. Like, you wouldn't get away with half as much. Yeah, sure. There's 6 in our family, so we had the big people carrier. So, you know, to be 8 or 9 young lads squeezed into the back, 1 or 2 in the boot, driven down to Carnew or, you know, Avondale or some, you know, far gone place down in Wicklow to play a game. So no, I don't think you get away with that nowadays.
Yeah, and then just annoying them for maybe McDonald's or an ice cream or
chips on the way home. Yeah. Always abusing mum or dad to stop and pull in at the chipper and get a few bites of chips for the lads on the way home. Win, lose, or draw. It was kind of the saving grace of some of those days, those rainy days down in Wicklow.
I was just thinking when I knew I was going to be chatting to you about two of the times I spoke to you in the last, like, 14 months now, or after two different European Cup finals. And I remember the happier kind of feeling of being over in Bilbao and everybody buzzing and the medals still around them. And you guys all flew back that night to kind of catch up with the A lads as well. And then again, then in Newcastle this year, it was a different vibe, but it's kind of, but you still, I remember you did stop. It was tough to get lads to stop, but I remember you stopped and chatted to us all.
Yeah, it was stark contrast, you know, and the difference in a year. You know, albeit I played probably a bigger part in this year's European campaign. You know, I didn't, last year kind of had 1 or 2 injuries, so I didn't get to feature as much, especially in the kind of knockout stages. When I kind of came back for the semi and the, oh, was it just the final maybe? But to be on the pitch in the day in Newcastle and not get the result we wanted was pretty gutting, like, especially just in the way we lost the game, considering how probably better we could have controlled at the times. You know, if we'd gone in a 14-4, I think it was, even a 10-4 instead of going in a 10-10, you know, it's a different game altogether. So our probably game management wasn't where I needed to be on the day, and it probably led to us ultimately not winning it. But, you know, in saying that, it's fantastic to be part of such a thriving squad. To play in back-to-back finals is something really special, and not too many people can say they've done it. So, you know, I do still believe that it's only the start of this success of this Leinster team. For so many of the lads coming through, you know, the talent and the depth is really exceptional, and hopefully we'll get another opportunity now this year to right that wrong and go back and get the win on the big stage.
And as a player, like, to be kind of walking out and you know, in those kind of mixed zone areas, and then anybody can stop you as well, is it the last thing you want to be doing, you know, like, or is it kind of tough to kind of do that kind of stuff as well and kind of get your message across as well? Like,
yeah, I think some lads kind of, I sometimes quite enjoy it, like, obviously depending on the result, and some lads kind of lean away from a little bit mightn't be for them, but it's sometimes tough to do, especially after a difficult loss like that. But it's you know, it's part and parcel of the job, and you just have to kind of get on with it.
And looking back to about Gerrards there as well, before you went on to Belvedere, did you play lock? Is that would you kind of a bit of lock when you were a teenager as well?
Yeah, I actually played a few games at Tidehead.
Yeah, as well.
Because so I was probably big for my age when I was, I know, 13. So like, I lumped a big lad in the front row. I was terrible. I scored one try ever in the first year I played rugby. We were playing, and I remember vividly, we were down playing in Gerrards, playing against Kilkenny, and it kicked off, and I caught the ball off the kickoff, and ran and scored. And I was like, oh, it's just a bit of cracking actually after doing this. And after about 5 minutes, the ref blew the whistle and stopped. He's like, stop, stop, stop. I was like, what's going on here? He was like, I was on the first year B team, I think.
Yeah, yeah.
And we were playing the Kilkenny A side. So they got in the teams mixed up, so he blew it. I was like, no, we have to start again. We have to bring the other side, the other pitch was the A's and the B's playing against each other. So we had to bring their B team down to us.
Oh.
So my one and only try was disallowed pretty quickly. So that was my last games at Tighthead Prop, which was pretty bitter to take. But then I kind of hit a bit of a growth spurt, pushed into the second row, and then less hated, it's probably a negative way of putting it, but probably enjoyed it more in second year and third year when I got to move into the back row and wasn't squashed into the front row. Like.
And we were talking about there, the idea of like people who play multiple positions as well, loose head, tight head, from like Porter. You were saying you spotted him when he was on the show last season, filling the couch up pretty well.
Yeah, he probably took up a bit more of it than I did, but yeah, I just remember with the slick back hair, he was growing out long for Metallic at the stage. He had the textbook kind of Porter jeans, which are sewn onto him, and some unbelievably tight medium t-shirt. He looked the part, to be fair. I won't slag him off on camera.
The whole thing about it was then, yeah, like, because I'm reading up about you as well, because I remember when your name came up to me, like, you know, being a journalist and reporter covering the kind of the provincial sides and the national sides, it was more so you were doing stuff in the AIL, like you were kind of pulling up trees there as well, and you almost got brought back into the Leinster system, because was it you got maybe released after 1 year of the academy?
So I was in the sub academy, and I didn't initially get into the, back then you could have gone straight into the academy from school. I think they've changed that now, and everyone's kind of has to manage a year or two before they go in.
Mm-hmm.
But at that stage, lads were still going straight in, so I didn't get the nod to go in, nor did I deserve it now looking back.
Yeah.
But and then I picked up a few niggles, a few injuries, and I ended up didn't get initially selected for the Irish under-20s. So obviously pretty, you know, gutting considering I didn't get into the academy, and I was like, right, if I go well in the 20s, I'll hopefully make up and I'll get back in. So when I initially didn't get into the 20s squad, that was pretty tough to take. But I always said to myself, when I come out of school, if I can just play at the highest level I can, I'll be all right. So for me, you know, when I left school, you know, I talked to a few different clubs, but I always knew I wanted to play in the AIL. And I sat down with Phil Warahiko, who's head coach of Belvoir at the time. And he was for my first year there as well, you know, sat down. Obviously, they had pretty decent back row at the time. Leo Vaha was there. He obviously played with Leinster for a good bit as well. And he was, you know, unbelievable AI player back then.
Unstoppable man.
So he was kind of playing for Leinster and Belf at the time. So I said, you know, if I can go and I can learn a bit from him, and I can play when he's not around, and I can play in the AAL and show that I can handle myself to a good degree at that level, it'll show that I'm more than capable of playing under 20s. So I went to my first ever game against Mary's in the AAL. And you remember the France-New Zealand World Cup final, when Tony Woodcock scored that try down through the middle of the line.
The line-out, yeah, yeah.
Yeah, so we had a move like that. And I was the guy who's run to the line to catch the ball. So I was just off the bench. I was like, this is my first win. I was like, brilliant. I'm going to catch the ball. I'm going to break the line and score a try. It'd be great, you know, first cap for Bob, whatever else. I was playing against a former coach of mine from Gerrards, a guy called Damien Hall, who played for Ireland clubs a good few times at that stage. And he's been playing second row in Mary's. And I got the ball off the top line and I went to run through, and he absolutely cut me in half. And it was still to this day one of the worst tackles I've ever taken. I was winded, lying on the ground in bits. And that was my kind of start to the AL. I was like, right, if I can survive this massive hit and this kind of level of attrition, I'll be all right. And, you know, I was lucky enough to went on, and we didn't have a great year now. I think we barely stayed up, but went well with Belvo, and put in some good performance. And off the back of that, got picked back up by the Irish 20s and went on and played a good bit for them. And then through that, got into the Leinster Academy in the end. So, you know, I always put a lot of it down to that opportunity that I had in the AAL, the kind of opportunity that Phil and the rest of the coaches, Andy Dunn and Simon Keogh and stuff, who was playing at that time, still at Bevo. You know, if I hadn't have had that opportunity to play for Bevo, I don't know if I ever would have gone back and get in the 20s and gone back to making the academy. So, you know, I think the AAL is a massively important part of Irish rugby and grassroots rugby. And I definitely don't think I'd be here today if it wasn't for that.
And then once you got into the Leinster setup, it was pretty quick ascension as well, because then you, like, looking back there, even on these games you played for Ireland, like, that you were in that Scotland game and you're in the kind of World Cup warm-up camp 4 years ago as well. So that was like a quick enough rise for you as well. And
yeah, so it probably took me a while to get into the setup, and but once I got in, you know, I caught a good few caps pretty quickly. I was fortunate enough staying injury free, and Matty O'Connor was there at the time and took a bit of a liking towards me and gave me a lot of opportunities to play. And I went from playing, I think my second or first year in the academy, I had one cap, and then the next year I went on and played, you know, 20 odd times. So I kind of went from 0 to 100 pretty quickly. And, you know, then I got an opportunity with the Irish Wolfhounds against England, and Stuart Lancaster was the coach of them that day down in Independent Park. And then I went, had a lovely trip over to Tbilisi for a few weeks the end of that season, which was a memorable few weeks to say the least.
This is Emerging Ireland, was it?
Yeah, Emerging Ireland. Yeah. We had, I think it was the second day, it was the third or fourth day, it was after our first game, and there was heavy rainfalls, and the local zoo flooded, and all the animals escaped. And you know, we woke up the next day, and we didn't think it, and we woke up the next day with pictures plastered all over the paper, and pieces of paper slid underneath the doors, being like, be careful, wild animals on the loose. I'm reading this, being like, this is, someone's taking the mic here, like, this couldn't be true. But there was, you know, wild hippos, well, obviously not non-wild hippos running around the streets, and alligators and stuff. So that was a pretty memorable experience. But I went from there, and I was lucky enough to make the World Cup squad. Got my first cap against Scotland. Unfortunately, didn't make the cut to go to England. But you know, I learned that it took a lot from those experiences, and took a lot from what was needed to push on to play at that level. And you know, it took me another 2 years to get my next cap, which was America.
Yeah.
Away over in the USA, even over in New Jersey there 2 years ago. So I had to bide my time a while to injuries and obviously selection. So, you know, it's been since then, the last few years, it's been fantastic, and I've gone on to play, you know, 12 more times and you know, had a bit of success with Leinster and Ireland, so it's been great. It's been great experience and thoroughly enjoyable.
And then like those two games, and you played over in Japan against the Red Roses as well. Isn't that what they're called?
Cherry Blossoms.
The Red Roses are England.
Yeah, I think so. Cherry Blossoms, all right.
I think it could be something like that.
Yeah,
but playing against those guys, what was it? And the fact, I think you got in those three games three tries as well. I think you got two in one of the games, but. The inside, and a lot of you guys who went over there with likes of James Ryan as well, and Joey went over there as well, and a lot of lads who are now hoping is going to be in that squad. So is it great having been over there to Japan as well?
Yeah, absolutely. I think it's nice to not be going over to this massive unknown. You know, at least culturally, we have some idea what it's like. We were there obviously in early June, so the weather was, you know, it's going to be hotter than it will be in September. That in itself was a bit of a learning curve, and something that, you know, we had to kind of get used to. It was unbelievably hot. It was like 90% humidity, even more. And that obviously takes a toll on your rugby. Yeah. So it takes a while to grow accustomed to that. But, you know, the week before when you've been in America, it was pretty hot as well. So it was good kind of practice for a few weeks in Japan. You know, Joe and Simon took a very young side over to Japan at that stage. Obviously the Lions was on, so a lot of the lads were missing, so it was more of a kind of experimental youthful Irish squad that went over. You had the likes of James Ryan, who'd never played for Leinster, and played for Ireland, scored a try, the first touch of the ball against America. Porter was there. Yeah, Jacob Stockdale, Joey, he played in the first, unfortunately picked up a knock and then went home. You know, Ringer was there. There was a few old heads, you know, with Earlsey and Church and Dave as well, to kind of round out, give us a bit more experience. But that was an incredible experience, and it was my first taste of being on an Ireland tour, and something I thoroughly enjoyed.
I just remember, definitely one of those games, Ringer was just pinging conversions and penalties from the sideline as well. It's just another thing that he can do, you know. Like,
yeah, he does not much he can't do, really, yeah. To be honest. He's a few strings as well.
But I remember at the time, it was around that time where just as you were kind of even getting your first taste of being with Ireland as well, a lot of the talk then came around like CJ Stander, because he was just becoming Irish qualified. But it was after a Heineken Cup game, and you spoke very well about it and said, listen, he's been here long enough, he's kind of satisfied all the rules, he's qualified, and he is of a standard, and if he gets in ahead of us, we're doing something wrong. We have to lift our own standards. It was very good to have a current player coming out and say something like that as well. And is that what that kind of thing, like, for someone like CJ, especially that number 8 jersey as well, is he's someone that you often then said, okay, well, listen, if he's playing at the standard, I have to up my game again, even though I'm playing for Leinster regularly. If I want to play for Ireland, I have to up it again.
Yeah, absolutely. I think it was after Montpellier at home. We just won and got asked, you know, what I thought of it, and you know, I stand by what I said there in those statements. And you know, CJ's gone on and played so many times in green, and had a fantastic career so far, and he's you know, being a great servant. But yeah, like, you know, he raised the bar a little bit, probably in a different mold than Jamie was, in a different mold than I am as well. So you know, I don't like to compare us too much, because I don't think we have overly similar styles. Mm. You know, CJ's probably a bit more direct than I am. But look, he's been the kind of standing number 8 for Ireland for the last few years, and he's dominated that position. And you know, only in the last few months, through injury, did I get an opportunity to play. Obviously, when he took that knock to the face, and you know, now I think I've come to an age and I've put in the performance that I'm instead of kind of having to buy my time, I think it's the time is now, and you know, have the opportunity to challenge him. But you know, as you said earlier, CJ, myself, we've both slotted into the back row together and played on the same pitch in the same day. So it's something that can be done. I think it's benefited Ireland at times in the past, you know, whether it was that last test in Australia last year, we went on to get that famous win, or you know, even not as famously the last day against Wales, we were both on the park when we finished up along with Pete. So I'm not saying that will happen, but it's definitely something that could happen, and we think we have that balance between us, where we get a good all-rounded back row.
And then for yourself, even like World Cup memories, anything that stands out, like watching Ireland or even other games, maybe watching the All Blacks run amok at some stage? Or
yeah, obviously I didn't watch it live, but looking back, and obviously the likes, you see clips of John O'Nomu, you know, absolutely tearing it up when we're on the World Cup stage, and you know, famous winning drop goals from South Africa and England and whatever else, and our Irish performances over the last few years. You know, there's been so many great memories, and hopefully in the next few months we'll look to push on and do something that no Irish team has done before, and get into a last four.
And what do you do then at the same time, is like, because all the eyes are on you guys, especially now, it's like the focus is starting to turn back, especially the minute these first like warm-up games start as well. But what do you do to get away from everything? Is it you go back home, friends and family, just kind of keep your mind off everything for a few days?
Yeah, absolutely. You know, I think time outside of rugby, outside of camp is always such a short window, and it's very important to, you know, to recover and relax, but to switch off as well. And I kind of have a rule that I try not to bring rugby home here, try not to meet up with my mates and talk about it too much. You know, obviously you kind of chat briefly about it and tell them how the week's been, whatever, but I don't like to go into too much depth or try to kind of overthink things and talk about it for too long. You know, so much of life is spent thinking about it and you know, playing rugby, that it's, you need the break, you need to step away from it, you need to be mentally fresh when you come back into it. And I think it's tough to do if you constantly worry about it and constantly talk about it. So, you know, time away from the game is massively important to me.
And then the whole thing about, like, let's say you guys probably all knew before you went on your summer break that you're coming back and maybe going to go into early pre-season as well. So can you cut loose, or are you kind of like, did anybody come back maybe like in worse shape than they should have? Like,
No, I think the majority of the lads, you know, look after themselves pretty well in the off-season. It's tough though to go from the level we were training at and the amount of metres you cover and the weight sessions that you do, to then peel that all back and nearly go to zero for the first week or two of your holidays, you know. And it's necessary to enjoy yourself and not get massively out of shape, but to, you know, have the, you know, slice of pizza, have that extra beer or whatever, and to enjoy it and just be willing and ready to work that extra bit harder to get back into the shape you were. Obviously, you can't afford to let it all go because you'd just be too far behind, but it's definitely a challenge to get that balance right when you're first on holidays between enjoying yourself. And I found it quite difficult this year. I was away with my missus in Italy, and you know, the first few days I was like, oh, World Cup's coming up, I can't eat that. But then after a few days you kind of slowly unwind and you get holiday mode sets in, you can afford to enjoy yourself and just be like, look, I'll do what I have to do now to relax and recover, and then you know, if I have to pay the price for it in a few weeks, I will. But I don't think I came back in too bad a shape, thank God.
Well, listen, when it's all going on, hopefully when Sports Fest and all is kicking off, you'll be over in Japan, and things will just be about starting heating up as well. But yeah, as you said, like, Sports Fest is something you're kind of getting behind, and it sounds like there's a lot kind of planned for those that whole week, isn't it? In late September, isn't it?
Yeah, absolutely, and it's, you know, it's a great opportunity for so many different people in the community to get out and get active and, you know, be healthy. And there's the wide variety of things going on for the week. So it's going to be exciting times.
And the last thing I was going to ask you then was, it won't happen now, but the next two or three weeks, the last person you want to get a phone call now from is Joe Schmidt. Will you be screening his phone calls, or
it'll be straight to voicemail? If I see my phone ringing, it'll be one of those things you look at and you're like, right, I suppose I better have to answer this. Like, so hopefully if he rings me, it'll just be for a chat.
Yeah,
Look, you know, it's a tough scenario. Not everyone can go, and we're in a highly competitive squad, and the standard's so high. You know, no one knows what's going to happen with regards to injury as well. Like, certain people you think might be nailed on might make it, and hopefully we can minimise as many injuries as possible so we have the healthiest and thickest squad we can going over. But it's all wait to be seen.
Well, listen, good luck over the next few weeks, and stay healthy, stay safe, and stay out of trouble, I suppose, as well.
Cheers, thank you.
Cheers, Jack.
Joe presents Baz and Andrew's House of Rugby, together with Guinness.